Do aliens exist, and are they among us? Are weird creatures lurking in the darkness? Do evil entities hide in the shadows of your bedroom while you sleep? Join us as we explore all this and more on the Warped Reality Podcast.
Hey, what's going on, everybody? Welcome to the Warped Reality Paranormal Podcast, bonus episode number 2 for season 5. I'm really excited to bring you guys this episode. It's going to be an awesome one, and I really hope that you guys are enjoying this season so far. It's a little bit different than the other seasons that I've ever put out before, and myself, Creepy Ken, Edgegrave Dave, and the Nat Man are really hoping that you guys are enjoying it. And this episode is no exception, everybody. You're going to love this one, man. We have an awesome segment of The Right Headspace with John Wright, where he actually concludes his whistleblower series with Jake Barber, and he puts a great spin on it. It's a great segment. You're going to love this one. But before that, we're actually going to hear from Edgegrave Dave doing his awesome horrible review on a classic horror movie, Christine. So actually, before we get into that, though, I'm going to give you a little bit of a warm-up here for that. Did you guys know that there's actually a whole subgenre of horror dedicated to killer or possessed vehicles? And it's surprisingly rich with cult classics and bizarre gems. If you like Christine, here are some others that might rev your engine. So let's talk about The Car. It came out in 1977, and it's about a demonic black sedan terrorizing a small desert town. No driver, and no mercy. And then you got Maximum Overdrive that came out in 1986. It was written and directed by Stephen King, and this one features all machines, including trucks, coming to life and turning homicidal. Then you got Duel from 1971, and that's Spielberg's early thriller about a mysterious truck that relentlessly stalks a lone driver. It's more psychological than supernatural, but it's still terrifying, you know? And then here's probably my favorite that I'm definitely going to be checking out. This one's called Killdozer. And it came out in 1974, and it's about a bulldozer that's possessed by an alien force, and it goes on a rampage. That sounds awesome. Edgegrave, if you could review that one, that would be sick. And then you have The Hearse that came out in 1980. A woman inherits a haunted house and a ghostly hearse that stalks her. Then you got Wheels of Terror from 1990. A school bus driver chases down a mysterious car that's been abducting children. You have Death Proof from 2007, which was Tarantino's grindhouse flick about a stuntman who uses his Death Proof car to kill women until they fight back. And then you have Rubber that came out in 2010. And it's not a car, but it's a sentient tire with telekinetic powers that goes on a killing spree. It's crazily absurd, but probably pretty brilliant. So there you go. There's some awesome vehicle horror for you guys to check out. Without further ado, let's get into Edgegrave Dave's horrible review on Christine. Take it away, Edgegrave.
Horrible review with Edgegrave Dave.
Hey guys, Edgegrave Dave is here and live from the car. We are shifting gears into the summertime, the summer season. The heat wave is on. I'm actually next to Morgan Edgegrave, believe it or not. And I've got a little treat for you, a little bonus from the Edgegrave archives around the time of spooky season last year. I've got a little segment that I would like to deploy upon the world, and we're traveling. Here we go. Vroom, vroom. All right, grave diggers. Edgegrave Dave is here. And at the time of this recording, we're revving up right into spooky season. And what better way to start it up than with an Edgegrave warning, spoiler alert. You have been warned. Now, some of you guys might have picked up on this while we're shifting gears right into spooky season. Why is Edgegrave Dave making all these car references? You know, it's funny how some of these reviews do come about. You never know what inspires you, and it's not exactly because all these Transformers 1 trailers are currently being shown right now on TV, and it's not because the television show Yellowjackets was discussed during a hangout with my buddy Jayco. Well, then again, both of those things kind of got me thinking. It actually is. Transformers, Christina Ricci, who's one of the stars in that show. What was the first Transformer that Edgegrave Dave ever knew? Well, it happens to actually have to do with both of those things. I'm talking about Stephen King's 1983 film, Christine, which was actually made by John Carpenter of Halloween fame. Ho ho, here we go. Vroom, vroom. Did you know that 1983 had not one but three major Stephen King films? That's right. We had Cujo, we had The Dead Zone, and then towards the end of the year, we had Christine. This was actually one of the years that did not have a Friday the 13th film, believe it or not. And those years are 1983 and 1987. But one of the stars, John Stockwell, that did actually play Dennis, was in Friday the 13th of the series. And then you have Keith Gordon that happened to be in a sequel to Jaws. And then 1983 had Jaws 3, 3D. It's so funny how all these things come about and how things are oftentimes connected. When a lot of people think about John Carpenter, they're not often thinking about Christine. But I'll tell you, the music in this film, and I hadn't seen it in years, sort of reminds me a little bit of Halloween 3 Season of the Witch. It sort of has that really eerie vibe. Like I said, I hadn't seen this movie in years, and after watching it, I don't even know if I've even seen the entire thing when I was a kid. Out of all the Stephen King movies that I've seen, it's just not a movie that I've really gone back to. It's not anything that was ever sort of playing at like a party or at like a hangout. I just had to see it again because there's also been talk about the Blumhouse Film Productions making a new version of it. And we were convinced that either it's out now or it's being made. Well, sadly, they were talking about that in 2021. And as of 2023, production has halted. But in this day and age of remakes, I'm really glad that there haven't been any real sequels. There haven't really been anything. This is a standalone film. And the book right now, I'm pretty sure is standalone on its own. Although I think there's a short story that Stephen King might have made in 2015. However, we've never actually seen the book come out yet, and this announcement on Stephen King's website is close to about 10 years ago. Shifting gears back to the movie here, you know, this is just one of those movies where you can just kind of sit back and it's so bad is good kind of a things, and that's not taking anything away from John Carpenter or any of the actors. We have a 1958 Plymouth Fury in red. And the film starts off, we're in the assembly line. All the other cars aren't even painted or tan. There's no real origin here. You just have a car that's going through the assembly line. And all these, let's call them mishap type deaths, just keep happening. And then fast forward to the main characters. You have Arnie Cunningham and his friend Dennis. Arnie's like a real nerd type of character. Dennis is kind of like your typical jock. He's kind of popular, plays football. Everybody's making fun of poor Arnie here. They get into a situation where Arnie sees that there's abandoned Christine that's just in some house that he keeps passing by, like a farmhouse. And when he buys this car, there's almost something mystical or supernatural that, you know, something's not right about it. And that's not just because of the previous scenes with all the deaths that happened when the car was in the assembly line all those years ago. When he gets this car, literally, he just changes. There's not a lot of reasons why a lot of things happen in this movie. You're just sort of going through it. A lot of dumb teenagers, a lot of really stupid dialogue about different things with girls and parties and the way that they're apprehensive and that they're mean towards Arnie. But what I find the most interesting thing about this entire film is the way that he changes. And you just got to wonder, is he possessed by the car? Like, what's going on here? Well, he loves that car. And even his girlfriend, Leah, who everybody wants to go out with, even she starts to suspect that there's something not quite right. everything's just going on with this car. When the action starts to slowly kind of come on and the radio is playing by itself and it starts going after people, oh man, between the music, the early 80s feel, and the bad acting, you're in for a real treat. It's just such a treat to see something like this. It really sort of echoes as a testament to the time frame of the movie as well. Because that's what we all want to see, right? We just want to see Christine just going after people. And I got to tell you, a lot happens to this car. And that's why I did mention Transformers. But that's also my biggest issue with it. It's a supernatural car. You have a bunch of bullies, the people that were making fun of Arnie. I mean, smashing and ripping this car to shreds, tearing up the seats with a knife. They're breaking the windows. He does work at an auto garage. And the car can just supernaturally repair itself. And then fast forwarding to the ending, that's my biggest issue that I have with it. Enjoying all the subplots and all the issues that Arnie has with his parents and the language that was used back then. In the 80s, you can say almost anything that you wanted. And man, it just really just holds diamonds with just how much it cuts with a knife, all this dialogue. But this car, it can be on fire, it could be smashed, it could be ripped up, it could be torn, and it could just transform just like that, just to go back. There's really no reason why. We don't really know, as I've said, where it draws its power from or what's going on, but then you have the ending. Let's just say Christine versus a bulldozer. Hey, that's something that I would like to see at WrestleMania maybe next time, right? And then with the way that it ends, I just kept saying to myself, transform! Let's go. Come back. It's just a movie that you could enjoy for just what it is. And you can laugh at certain things and then you can get really excited. And then it just kind of ends and stops and it entertained you for the time that you have spent watching this movie. So Stephen King himself had said that out of all the movies that he's made, this was one of two movies that he was bored with. And I know how he felt about The Shining, but I mean, being bored with Christine, I mean, did John Carpenter not do a good job? Actually, I thought that with what he was working with and the practical effects and everything else that I mentioned, it's actually a pretty good ride. So I'm going to give Christine a 3 out of 5 graves. It's a real testament to its time of the 80s. It was a movie that, while we might not have necessarily needed, hey, they even made a horror film about tires nowadays. So I think that it all started with Christine. So give me fuel, give me fire, start it up. Back to you, Ghost Joe.
Thanks a lot, Edgegrave, for that amazingly energetic review. And it was awesome, man. Thank you so much. And keep it going, bro. Keep it going. So anyway, before we get into John Wright's awesome segment here, I wanted to actually talk a little bit about something else here. Have you guys ever heard of crop circles? I'm sure you have, right? So for some, they're elaborate hoaxes, right? But for others, they're messages etched into the earth by something watching from above. But what if the real story isn't just in the patterns and it's in the evidence left behind? You know, let's talk some numbers, right? So since the 1970s, over 10,000 crop circles have been reported worldwide, with the UK leading the count, particularly in Wiltshire, where nearly half of all British formations have appeared within a 15-kilometer radius of the ancient Avebury stone circles. In the US, states like Oregon, California, and Illinois have become unexpected hotspots with dozens of documented formations cataloged by the ICCRA, the International Crop Circle Researchers Association. Yes, that's a real thing, I guess. But it's not just the frequency, right? It's the complexity. Take the 2001 Milk Hill Formation in Wiltshire, a sprawling spiral of over 400 circles spanning nearly 500 meters. Researchers estimated that if it were man-made, it would have required one circle every 30 seconds over 4 hours in total darkness. Then there's a 2002 Crooked Soli Formation, resembling a DNA double helix with 1,296 quadrants, 509 of which were flattened with surgical precision. and the anomalies. They're just as strange, right? In many authentic formations, plant samples show elongated nodes and expulsion cavities, as if flash heated from within. Soil samples sometimes contain magnetized iron spheres, microscopic and fused, like they'd been exposed to intense heat and cooled instantly. These aren't the calling cards of pranksters with planks, you know? Now, let's talk about some of the icons, right? So the 1991 Barbary Castle Formation, dubbed the mother of all pictograms, was one of the first to suggest encoded geometry, sparking a wave of mathematical interpretations. In 2001, a formation appeared beside the Chilbolton radio telescope that mimicked the 1974 Arecibo message sent into space, except this one had a silicone-based alien figure and altered DNA strands. I mean, is this really a prank, or is it something else? Even the skeptics admit some of these designs are way too intricate, too fast, and too strange to dismiss outright. And while many circles are confirmed hoaxes, the ones that aren't, well, they leave behind more questions than answers. So, as we hand things over to John Wright, keep this in mind. Crop circles may be beautiful, but they're not just art. They're data. They're patterns. And maybe, just maybe, they're a language we haven't learned to read yet. So, without further ado, I know I say that a lot. I'm sorry. I gotta look at more terms, I guess. Anyway, here's John Wright with the Wright Headspace.
Good evening. You are entering a dimension where up is down. Good is evil, and day is night. You've just made a wrong turn into the right headspace.
Thanks, Joe. Welcome back, everybody. Today's segment deals with the last installment of Whistleblowers, and this one deals with the most recent guy. His name is Jacob Barber. Excuse me. He most recently did an interview with Russ Coulthart. He's the Australian dude who's on News Nation. And in all honesty, I really don't put too much stock into what comes out of that group. A lot of it is just, I'll talk a little bit more about that when we get to the very end of the segment and I start talking about the video that they produced that supposedly shows the egg that this guy is talking about. Anyway, so who is Jacob Barber? If you go through and take a look online, you're going to find some info, not a tremendous amount, but you'll find some. He served in the Air Force, and afterward, he will work as a private contractor for the DOD, so he says. And he says he does this as a helicopter pilot. Now, one of the things that they do talk about in the interview, and if you do want to, again, I encourage everybody, watch the interview for yourself, come to your own conclusions. If you do want to watch the full video, then what you're going to do is go online, News Nation, Ross Coulthart interviews Jacob Barber. The interview is a grand total of 2 hours and 47 minutes. Now, I would be totally upfront with you guys. I did not make it the full 2 hours and 47 minutes. And you'll see as I kind of go through here as to why. Anyway, back to him. One of the things that they do show is his discharge papers. Now, when it comes to the discharge papers, it's basically what they refer to as a DD-214. So discharge from duty is what the double D stand for. Basically, they were able to confirm that he was in the Air Force and that he was what they referred to as an aerospace mechanic. But it doesn't mention anything about being a pilot. And there's really not much else in the personnel file. Anyway, moving on. So he says that he serves for a total of 30 years between military and between private contracting for the DOD and the intelligence community. The interview begins with Barber talking about how he was recruited in the Air Force at the age of 17. he talks about this being like a special program, all this other stuff. Here's what I'm going to say. I'm a high school teacher. I have kids who do track for me that have been quote unquote recruited. Like these guys come to the high school all the time, recruiting kids for the military. So did they like seek him out and recruit him? I don't think so. But anyway, that's just me. Now, he states that the contract for this program that he was supposedly selected into was for 10 years. Now, I looked online to verify and see if this is in fact correct. Now, from what I understand, there is a program, but it's not necessarily something that's like a, we'll call it a special or operations kind of program. But they do have these programs, and they do have 6-year contracts. They do not have 10-year contracts. Maybe he misremembers how long the contract lasted. I don't know here. Either that, or he's just kind of blatantly lying to us. He states that this was for the Air Force Special Operations Selection. The selection process was 4 months in length. After completing it, he was entered into what he refers to as the quote-unquote pipeline. He will be approached by quote-unquote certain individuals and asked to become an airplane mechanic. Russ Coulthard asks, was this supposed to be your cover? To which Barber says, yes. Before I go any further, I want to mention that he does use the term DOPSER. DOPSER stands for Defense Office of Pre-Publication and Security Review. And I believe he does this as a way of avoiding deeper questions and providing details. So what's the purpose of DOPSER? DOPSER's role is to make sure that anyone with security clearance, whether it's past or present, does not reveal information about classified programs. For example, if that person is doing a speech, a presentation, or writing a book about their time in the military, it has to be reviewed to make sure that the classified information that they dealt with is not revealed to the public. This is sometimes referred to as a NDA or a non-disclosure act. Now, Coulthard will ask Barber about his training. As I said earlier, nothing appears on his paperwork. He states that the majority of his training is done through what he calls, quote-unquote, clubs. You can hear me do the quote-unquote thing probably a few times during this. I believe this is Barber's code word for his special training programs. In other words, it wasn't official. It's not something that he does. And I'll be honest with you, I'm not in the military, never been in the military. My father was. But if you go to West Point, and I have had people who I know that have gone to West Point. West Point does have these kind of clubs. Now, is this something that is like special training to get you ready for special operations? I don't know about that one. Anyway, so as he goes through, he lists what he refers to as his clubs that would eventually help him and put him ahead in regards to his special training. One of the things he lists is the parachute club, scuba club, weapons club, pilot club, Spanish club, medical club, and then there were a couple more that he mentions. He states that he was there on his own. His skills will earn him a place on what he calls Op 4 or Operational Force, and he terms it Red Team. He refers to the Red Team as the quote-unquote bad guys. Red Team, and this is me paraphrasing, Red Team's job is to test the will and skill of what he refers to as the Blue Team, which is the regular military, but he does not go into any deeper explanation as to what his role was or what their job was and what Blue Team was supposed to be and all these other things. If I'm going to make some sort of, I'm going to speculate a little bit here. Maybe his job, if he truly was on this Red Team, that their job was to kind of employ certain scenarios just to see how the regular military, or what he calls the regular military, would react to those types of stimulus. Anyway, at this point, Coulthard states something about Barber has the training of a top-tier Air Force operative. Now, does Air Force have their own special forces? Yeah, they have what they refer to as STS-2. But he also says, but you're not an operator. Barber reinforced that notion, saying that he had never been assigned to a task force. So Carthar asks, what were you? Barber replies, I was a highly talented airplane mechanic who got to deploy on a number of presidential support missions. He provides a couple of examples. One of them is as a security escort for a number of what he calls HVTs, which stands for high value targets. And he says that this took place in Bosnia. He and his team were sent to retrieve HVTs. In this case, it was computer hard drives. But when they arrived at the scene, the hard drives were missing. Now, there's some other stuff that comes out about this later on. And again, kind of touch on a little bit later. Actually, I'll be really honest, transparent. I'm not going to get to it. And you'll see why as we get to the end of this. Carthar brings up that Barber had been recommended for a Medal of Heroism. Barber says that he can't go into details. Why? You guessed it. Dopser. Barber says that his commanding officer refused to approve it because he was a quote-unquote mechanic. And the supervisor said, well, why would a mechanic get a medal for chasing war criminals in Bosnia? Now, he continues on and he says that everything changed on 9/11. Barber said he left the Air Force and did not serve in the war on terror. He said instead, he was sent to California to start working on his cover as an independent contractor. He never states who it was that told him this. Why? You guessed it, Dopser. He was told to do it so he could serve for what was coming down the line next for me. That's a direct quote from him. While working on his cover, he met people from an aerospace company. Does not name them. Why? Dopser. At this point, I think what I'm going to do is I'm going to suggest to anybody who's listening, if you do, every time I mention the term Dopser, do a shot. If you decide to do so, so I'll give you a disclaimer here. If you decide to do so, you take full responsibility for your actions. All of you are probably going to be blackout drunk and passed out on the floor by the time you are done. Why? Because the info up to this point only covered the first 24 minutes of a 2+ hour interview. And last, may God have mercy upon your soul. But I digress. Barber claims that they were there to demonstrate weapon systems that could be used to disable vehicles and craft. He could not mention what type of weapons, why. Dopser, take a shot. Carthar says, I can confirm there were pulse microwave weapons being used at that time. This is confirmed by Barber with a nod and a grunt. Doesn't say anything, just kind of like shakes his head and gives a little grunt. Barber continues to talk about building a backstory for his cover and that there is no record of that. So if you go online and you look at any of this stuff, there's absolutely nothing really there to back up some of the claims that this dude makes. Anyway, he continues. He went to an actual commercial pilot school, even though he had already, based on what he said, even though he had already mastered the skill of being a pilot in the Air Force with his quote unquote clubs. But the problem is you don't get a certification with your club. When Carthar asks why, Barber explains that he needed a legitimate story to explain how he became a pilot. And this was all done to protect his cover, and that the best cover was something truthful and legitimate. In one of the funnier moments in the interview, Carthar asks, are you a front? You've worked in counterintelligence. You're a trained intelligence operative. Is this some kind of disinformation propaganda operation? As I said before, I find this really, really amusing. The reason why is because none of his training can be confirmed. If you look at his DD-214, there's nothing there to support any of the claims that A, Barber is making, and B, any of the things that Coulthard's trying to do to kind of corroborate what this guy is stating. Anyway, Carthar continues, Is this part of some type of government disclosure operation? Barbara's response was, no, it's not. And I'm not going to be able to make you believe that. But what I can do is this. I'll paraphrase the book of Matthew. You will know us by our fruit. I would like you to stay tuned and watch what our new project is about to do. Oh my God. So at this point, I'm sorry. I'd like to say a few words, but I want to try and keep this as clean as possible. I'll just put LMFAO. I feel almost inspired by this guy. And if you can't pick up that sarcasm, the only thing I can say is that at least need to bring up Dobser, right? Kothar asks, so you are part of a team that is proposing to do private retrievals, to which Barbara responds, yes. Barbara goes on to mention that he has spent a considerable amount of time setting up legitimate businesses to build his cover story and then waited for the DOD, the DOI, etc. to reach out to him. He states that the government contracted him to do firefighting. He describes as long haul, short haul. And he also says that he did some stuff for the Bureau of Indian Affairs. So when he talks about firefighting, you know, like forest fires and the helicopters will fly over and they'll drop the stuff on it to try and put them out. Long haul, where you're picking up things and you're taking it more than just like 100 miles. You're taking it much, much, much further than that. Now, he claims that a lot of the work he did was on what he calls the range. He explains that the range is a geographical area where the government and their partners test all kinds of things. Examples, weapon systems and how resilient craft were to those weapon systems. He does not mention where. Why? Dobser. He does say that some of the technology we have is amazing. Rosk asks Barbara, were you telling yourself that what you were seeing was technology and not something anomalous? Barbara says, yeah, you kind of have to train yourself. Once you become a believer of the UAP subject and you take some folks outside and they look up, they get really excited and falsely identify a satellite as a UAP. Barbara is asked if he had seen anything that matched the quote unquote five observables. Now, I'm just going to throw this out there. If you are somebody who is like a Lou Elizondo groupie, then you've heard the five observables. You've seen the show Unidentified, and you've watched them repeat this over and over and over again. Anyway, if you haven't, for those that haven't, I'll just throw them out here. Number one is what they refer to as instantaneous acceleration. Number two, hypersonic speeds. Now you have what's called supersonic, which means you break the speed of sound. Hypersonic is when you not only break the speed of sound, but you can maintain it for a long period of time. Number three is transmedium travel, meaning you can go from space to air to water and whatever and back out. Number four, positive lift. And what they basically say here is some sort of unexplained propulsion system. And then number five, the ability to, they call it stealth, like to mask or cloak or what have you, so that it cannot be seen, nor can it be detected. Barbara claims to have seen craft come out of the ground and out of ridges. Anybody else getting that that Skinwalker Ranch or kind of like the Dulce bass vibes going here? I know I am. He refuses to mention where this occurred. Why? Dobser. He also states that they have recovered NHI, non-human intelligence, and government tech, but cannot mention what or where. Why? Dobser. Again, at this point, I'm only covering what was the first 34 minutes of the video. If you are doing the drinking game, God help you. Kothart will ask Barber when he realized he was doing NHI retrievals. Barbara explains, it became very clear the first time we recovered something that was non-human in origin that it was precisely what we were dealing with. Our communications changed, our communication process and procedure was all modified. It was also clear to everyone on the team that what we were dealing with was unexpected versus what was expected. And visually looking at the object on the ground, that it was extraordinary, that it was not human. Why did you think it was NHI? He never answers the question. Now, when you're asked, why do you think it's a non-human intelligence that created this thing? You got to come up with something, but he doesn't. He doesn't explain any of this stuff. Anyway, continuing on. So Kothar asks, how close did you get? Barbara's response was, I'm a helicopter pilot, and I operate with 150 and 200 foot lines. I got within 150 feet of the object. Kothar says, what did you see? Barbara states that he saw an egg. Now, I'm kind of aging myself with this one here. As soon as you started talking about eggs, my brain flashed to Mork from Ork. Nanu, Nanu, my man. Nanu, Nanu. Moving on. Kothar asks, how large was the object? Barbara says, I would say approximately 20 feet minus or plus a little bit. I would say the size of a large SUV. Okay. Side note, I don't know how many of you have an SUV, but I can say that I've never seen an SUV that's over 20 feet long. Just saying. Anyway, Kothar, did it have seams? Barber, no. Okay, another flag here, dude. You're 150 to 200 feet above the ground. How the hell are you seeing seams from that far away? Like, seriously. I can stand at the one end of my driveway. I can look, and this is at night too, by the way. How am I going to at night, even if I have my night vision camera out there, how the hell with my eyes am I going to see seams in the dark? Anyway, Kothar says, how did you know that the egg was non-human in origin? Barbara says, after seeing all kinds of things in my past, it was clearly something that was ridiculously looking and inconsistent with anything I've ever seen before. Have you never had an omelet, dude? Have you never made one? Have you never had eggs over easy? You've seen eggs. Anyway, he continues, I can also tell you that the reaction by my team was atypical. He continued, it had also been verified by me, by high-ranking members of the UAP task force, oh, sweet baby Jesus, that what we recovered that night was NHI craft. Kothar will comment about Barber helping, or Barber having high security clearance, and that clearance is greater than most senior Pentagon members. He mentions Air Force General Pat Ryder commenting that there was no recovered craft and suggests that it is because Barber had been read into the program and that Ryder was not. In other words, a general at the Pentagon who probably has greater clearance than most and has the ability to see pretty much anything. Kothar is saying that that guy did not have as good a clearance as as Barber. Seriously, man, pump the brakes here on this shit. You have top secret SCI clearance. You have compartmental clearance to serve in the programs. Barber responds, my clearance is given on an as-needed basis. There's no record of me having top secret clearance anywhere. Again, there's nothing to record this. And if you have security clearance, it's going to be recorded someplace. Anyway, Kothar mentions that Barber's paperwork does mention that he had NATO security clearance. And I'm going to say this, I'm not an expert to just because you have clearance for one particular, we'll call it topic, subject, mission, does not mean it's universal across the board. So I'll give you an example. My father had security clearance. He had high level security clearance when he served in the Army. He was part of what was called the ASA, the Army Security Agency, which is the predecessor to the NSA. He was part of a listening post in West Germany, and it was right on the border of East Germany. He was part of a team that intercepted East German transmissions. Those transmissions would be decoded, and then they would be encrypted. And they used to use the old computers, like the old reel-to-reel computers. He told me his clearance would not have allowed him to review information outside of what he was working on. So he had clearance to take those messages, do all those things that they were going to do, decode, encrypt, all that stuff, transfer information from one location to another, all these different things. And this was on a top secret base that nobody was supposed to know about. And he didn't have clearance to look at all this other stuff. He wouldn't have been able to find information or ask for information about any other program that was going on at that time. So when he talks about it's on a need to know basis, I kind of agree with that. It's based on he was given a certain amount of clearance for a certain topic, and that's all he was going to get. Everything else is compartmentalized. If you don't give up the whole picture, then one person gets captured, you don't have to worry about the big picture being discovered. Why? Because each person only has a tiny little piece of the puzzle, and it doesn't ruin it for everybody else. This sounds a lot like what's going on with Barber when he says on a need to know basis. Now, can you take that and kind of extrapolate that into he was able to do all these things and find, I'm going to go out on a limb here and say, again, I'm not there. I'm just kind of as an outsider looking in the basic knowledge that I have of this stuff. And I'm going to say, yeah, I don't think so. I think he may have had the NATO clearance to do what he was doing through NATO to help with Bosnia and whatever else he was going to do there. But that's not going to give you clearance to look at all this other information, retrieval programs, and that sort of stuff. Barbara will go on to talk about one of the occasions in which he retrieved an object. He gets all emotional, and he'll talk about how it impacted him and how the psychic connection with the object is still with him and how it is guiding and protecting him. He states that he did this alone at night while wearing night vision goggles. Again, I'm no expert, but every time you see a chopper or a plane and it's a military operation, there's going to be two pilots. So that right there, yeah, dude, come on, give me a break. And the bigger issue is just a couple minutes later, he's going to talk about how none of his crew reported suffering similar side effects from that incident. Red flag, people, you just said that you did this alone. Now, all of a sudden, you're saying that your team was supposed to be present, but you said you're doing it alone, did not suffer the effects. So that's a red flag for me, man. When you start having things like that, that's the shit that kind of stands out and makes you go, you know what? Maybe this guy's not being very truthful. He then goes on to say that on the range, and at first I thought he said ranch. And yes, that ranch. And no, I'm not going down that rabbit hole. Anyway, he states that on the range, there is a known and researched and implemented emotional or psionic component to the research and development of the UAP program. Okay, right now, you need to pause this segment, cue up the trailer for The Men That Stare at Goats. Seriously, like you need to look this up. Pause this, go look at that trailer. Why? Because, oh my freaking God, that's what this dude is talking about. It's a whole nother thing for a whole nother time. Anyway, if you want, pause it, go look. I'll wait. Welcome back. Things are starting to get a little crazy here. And I think I'm being nice when I say that. Barber's going to go on to talk about his grandfather's. How he was brought into the gifted and talented program. His one father was like an officer in the Navy. The other one was in the Army, and the two grandfathers got together and all this other stuff. Anyway, it's what they refer to as the GATE program, and how he was pulled out of regular classes twice a day and went to a separate classroom with a separate staff member. He got to play games, and he also comments on spending a lot of time outside. He states that he and the staff member designed creative classes together and presented them to the other students. Red flag. All right. I'm calling bullshit on this. Maybe every once in a while you have students design some sort of presentation, but at no point is the teacher going to allow a student to run the classroom. Second, this sounds more like a remedial type of situation. In today's day and age, education is not what it used to be. I'm just going to say that, right? When I was in school, if you were a little behind in math, reading, whatever it was, you would be pulled from your regular classes. You'd be sent to a resource room. You would meet with a special ed teacher. This would be done until you tested out because you were back on level. How do I know this? I was a remedial kid. I had remedial reading classes. And twice a week, you guessed it, I would be pulled from class. When the rest of the class was doing the reading, I would be pulled during that segment. I would be sent down and I would either meet with Mrs. Smith or Mrs. Quinn. And we would do reading exercises. They would give me on-level reading assignments. I would have reading comprehension questions, all these different things that I would have to do. And then eventually, once I was done and I tested out, I was able to go back into the classroom. Well, I shouldn't say able to go back. I didn't have to worry about twice a week being pulled from the classroom, sent down to the resource room so that I could work on my reading skills. Now, third, it's saying here that he had a private art teacher. Oh, my God. Anyway, he implies that all of this was done to get him ready for the selection process for the Air Force and the role that he would play in the future. Now, this is a dude who admittedly was failing classes. And trust me, I understand as a teacher. I've had kids super, super smart, did not work as hard as they were supposed to. I have this one kid. I talk about him every year. The kid had an eidetic memory. If you don't know what that means, it means he had a photographic memory. If he saw it once, he would remember it. I call him Joe, the man, the myth, the legend. That is the only kid I've had in the 29 years that I've actually been a teacher that I've ever had that did zero homework, but did so well on quizzes and tests. And in the end of the year, without even reviewing, dude scored a 98 on the final exam. And he had no notes. He didn't do anything the whole entire year, but this kid was that smart. I don't know. Maybe Barber falls into this program, but I don't know. Anyway. He states that his grandfathers, without his parents' permission, took him to UCLA several times to have him tested for special abilities. He claims that it was his creativity and imagination. And at this point, when you start doing the imagination thing, I have the image of SpongeBob doing the thing with the rainbow and saying, imagination. Because I think that's a lot of what's at play here is just creativity and imagination. Anyway, he said that's what helped him design war games as the red team leader. Now, all of a sudden, this dude's red team leader. He never mentioned that before. Now, all of a sudden, he's a team leader. Anyway, Cult Art comments. You know that the U.S. Air Force has been secretly using the GATE program, Gifted and Talented program, to test people for certain psychic abilities. My God. I can't. I'm only an hour into this video. And for my own state of mind, I need to skip some of this bullshit because it's starting to get really, really deep. it's like... I got visions of like Yoda and Luke Skywalker, and Yoda's sitting there like you either do or don't or whatever the hell it is. And he raises the X-Wing fighter from the swamp. That's the shit that's going on in my head right now. Now, I skipped a little bit more And the next thing he starts talking about is the CE5 protocol. It's like, I'm not even watching the video right now. I'm just going through my notes. And I'm just like, that's it. I'm done. So I was like, you know what? Let me keep watching this. Let me see what else. So as it continues, he starts talking about, he starts doing an analysis on what happened at Bentwaters. Dude, you weren't even freaking there. How are you going to do an analysis? Anyway. All right. So at this point, I was tapping out. I wanted to call quits on this thing. And I was like, you know what? Let me watch this a little bit further. See, all right, I gotta be as objective as I can. Let me take the emotion out of this thing. Let me try and see this thing through. Yeah, that didn't last much longer. I wound up tapping out. I think it was like, at this point, it was like 2:50 p.m. or some shit like that. And I was like, yeah, you know what? I'm done. Now, just as I started to say that, there was a video that popped up. So I was like, oh, you know what? I got to pump the brakes on this. And so this is, again, News Nation with Russ, Ross Coulthart. And they find this. Oh my God. They find this video. And just when you thought things couldn't get like any funnier, this video pops up. Now, to my knowledge, this video does not come from Jacob Barber. I don't believe he's linked to this video. It's not mentioned in when Russ Coulthart gives his explanation. So I'm going to go out on a limb and say, I don't think he's attached to this in any way, shape, or form. What I'm going to tell you to do is this. Pause this. Go online. Go to YouTube. Type in News Nation Egg Video. Once you do that, the search is going to bring up the News Nation video. It's about, I think it's like a minute 35 seconds or something like that. So here's what I want you to do. I want you to pause. Go watch the video. And then come right back to me. So pause right now. Go watch that video. All right. Welcome back. I've watched this video several times, and there are a number of things that really stand out to me in regard to the video and whether or not it's real. I'll save you the suspense. Oh, my God. God, this thing is not real. It's kind of like the gift that keeps on giving. If you're somebody who does have an objective and a very critical mind, you can look at this video and you can tear this thing apart within a matter of, I'm going to say, minutes. There's so many things here. So what I did was I went through, and then hopefully in the end here, I'm going to do some audio for you. And I'm really hoping that the audio is going to come through the way that I want it to, so you can see what I'm talking about. But I'll get to that in a minute. So first things first, when you see the beginning of the video and you can kind of see the what's supposed to be the toe line and the egg down at the bottom kind of dangling there, you see the ground below it. First thing that popped into my mind, damn, that looks a lot like styrofoam. Why do I say that? My brother and I, when we were younger, my parents bought us these train sets. And what we would do is we would build these landscapes. And they were big. We had this old pool table. We couldn't play it because like the table itself was kind of warped and the balls wouldn't move correctly. They always kind of sloped to one corner. So rather than use it to play pool, we actually used it as kind of like the base for making our landscapes. When we wanted to make mountains, hills, anything of that nature, we would use styrofoam. Why? Because A, super cheap. B, it was really easy to cut. You could actually shape it. You could texture it. And if you wanted to, you can like spray some paint on there, give it different colors. There's like little things that you could buy, like these little green bush kind of things that you could buy to put on there so that you can make it look a little bit more realistic. If you wanted to smooth some things out, all you needed was some sort of heat source, whether it be a heat gun. our typical tool of choice was a wood burning tool, because then we could kind of, as it would touch, you could kind of melt around the area to kind of smooth out any type of terrain features. Number two, the tow line. The line holding the object is stiff as a board. It appears as if it's actually attached to the camera. Like the camera is supposed to be attached to the rope, but it looks like the rope is actually attached to the bottom of the camera. When the object hits the ground, like there's no give in the rope. Like the rope, the tow line doesn't move. There's no slack. If you watch the video really closely, and the part that I'm talking about is pay really close attention to the 22 second through the 26 second mark of the video. In particular, right about the 23 second mark, because what you'll see is that during this part of the video, where the egg can be seen moving instead of the rope, the tow line stays straight and the egg is actually going to start to turn and point toward the ground. If this was real, then the rope and the egg would be moving in unison with one another, not just the egg moving toward the ground and the rope staying board straight. As you continue to watch, you'll actually notice that the rope, the tow line, is actually going to start to go in the opposite direction of the egg just prior to touchdown. In addition, there's no rotor wash. Like, as these things are coming down, they're going to create a lot of air. And one of the things is that you don't see any movement whatsoever on the ground. If that's, again, I think it's styrofoam, but anyway, you see no rotor wash. If it was a grassy field, you would see the grass kind of swaying and moving back and forth. If it was just, let's just call it dirt, even if it was just dirt, there's going to be dust clouds swirling around the area. I mean, pull up any video of a Huey helicopter, because that's what this dude says he flew, a Huey helicopter landing in Vietnam. And you'll see that there's swirls of dust and grass and things like that that are moving. None of those things are present in this video. Next is the audio. this has to be, I'm going to say, probably some of the shittiest audio that I have ever heard. One of the guys that I work with, and he's a tech guy, his name is Jack. Jack is probably, he's probably one of the smarter guys I know, especially when it comes to the tech stuff. In any case, so I went to Jack and I said, "Hey Jack, do me a favor." I didn't tell him anything that I was thinking. I said, "Do me a favor, watch this video. You give me your opinion on what you think of this video." As soon as I played it, he's listening to it. And he looks at me, he goes, "Man, that sounds like a really bad MP3 helicopter clip." And I'm like, "What?" He goes, "Yeah, just listen to that." He goes, "It's like somebody just clicked a button on a computer and they played this really crappy sort of audio clip." And I started laughing. Now, when I got home, I'd shown the video to my wife. My son was just happened to be walking through, and my son, I didn't even tell him anything. I didn't tell him I talked to Jack, any of that stuff. And my son actually makes the same exact comment. He goes, "Dad, that's a really bad MP3 helicopter clip." And so what I'm going to do is this. I'm going to play the audio for you, right? And I'm hoping, like I said, that this is actually going to come through the way that I want it to. When you're watching the video and you listen to the audio, it's not very loud. Now, if this is a really like a helicopter that is geared to picking up heavy stuff and all those things, these things are going to be really, really loud. Why do I say that? I live not too far from Stewart Airport, which has the Air National Guard base. And then not too far from me, only about 20 minutes from me, is West Point Military Academy. And when they do their different maneuvers and things like that, Black Hawks will actually fly over my house. And this is, I won't say on a regular basis, but at least 2-3 times a month, these guys will fly over. And you can hear them from miles away. Like the thumping of the rotors will actually cause the windows in my house to shake as they're flying over the house. and the noise can get really, really deafening. That's not what happens with this video. The video, the audio is more or less like, I'm going to call it like a side note, right? So what I'm going to do is I'm going to press play here, and I'm going to play the clip from the News Nation egg video. And then after that, I actually just recorded this yesterday. I'm going to play another clip for you, and that is a clip of a medevac helicopter actually flying over my house. It was, and I verified this, it was flying at an altitude of about 300 feet, so twice what this dude says. And again, the camera that supposedly this person risked putting their career and life on the line to capture, it would have been 150 feet. And actually, it would have been less than that because it would have been on the underside of the helicopter and have been much, much closer to the helicopter itself, which means it should have been even louder. But anyway, let me play the audio. And then what I'll do is I'll play the audio of the medevac that was over 200 feet away from me. Okay, so that was the audio from the News Nation clip. Now, what I'm going to do is I'm going to play the audio from the medevac helicopter that was flying over my house. Again, 200 feet above my house, not 15 feet below rotors. Okay, so now you got the audio from both of those. And like I said, one of them sounds like it sounds like it's coming from a computer. It's not very loud. You would expect it to be much, much louder. Hopefully it kind of comes through. The medevac flying over the house, that thing was pretty loud. And again, over 200 feet. Like I said, I verified it through Plane Finder that this thing was flying at an altitude of 300 feet. Instead of 12 feet away from the rotors. Now, the next thing that I looked at was the actual rope that was holding the what they refer to as the cradle. My dad was a butcher, and we used to tie roasts and all these different things, and we used what's called butcher's twine. So when you look at the cradle in the video, the rope that's supposed to be holding this UFO, or as Colthart refers to it as precious cargo, cue up Gollum from Lord of the Rings here, the precious. You might think that they'd use something, I'm going to call it a little bit more substantial, maybe a much, much thicker cable type rope that would be much more secure. That's not the case with this. A couple of wind shifts combined with a little bit of turbulence, Humpty Dumpty's falling out of that thing, and the Humpty Dumpty's cracking on the ground. The cradle, in my opinion, appears to be, if you've ever seen not the screening that goes in a window that's metal, but the kind that's more like a nylon or a cloth. That's what this seems to be. And if you look really closely, where the cradle wraps around the egg, you can see it looks like somebody sewed the ends of the quote unquote cradle around the egg to kind of cover it and keep it within that thing. Here's my thing. If this was legit, I think you're going to have something a little bit more substantial. Number five, there's no vibration whatsoever. Like, this camera doesn't shake at all. It is perfectly still. If this is actually attached to the rope, like the rope is going to swing back and forth, so the camera should move, but this is a perfectly stabilized shot. Number six, there's no flashing lights. Helicopters have navigational lights, or what they call crash avoidance lights, and they're going to strobe, and they're going to be on a couple different locations, and where this camera was located, you should have been able to see that. Even if you don't see it reflected in the actual camera itself, you just still see the lights reflecting off the ground, and you don't see any of that. Last but not least, there's no ground crew. Where's the ground crew? You have this precious object that you're flying into this area, and you're supposed to land it. Like, who's going to secure this thing? Usually when you watch this stuff, they're securing tanks, those types of things. You're going to see guys, as soon as that thing touches down, they're going to rush into that area. There's no heavy equipment. There is no, like, trucks, anything else that they're going to use to secure and move this object. And if you really, you want to prove to me that this video is legit, give me more than the 12 seconds that you actually posted. So if you're listening, Russ, which I doubt you are, but in any case, if you have a longer clip, do me a favor, show me the longer clip. Show me this thing making its descent from a much higher level, coming down to the ground, so that this way we can see what's around it. There's no landscape. It's all flat. There's no trees. There's no bushes. There's no life, no nothing. So in the end, when I look at this, I really look at this video and go, man, it doesn't get any worse than this. It reminds me of, here's how I'm going to state it. A guy in their basement using a camera that's got a night filter, or make it look like a night vision filter, one of those crappy old kind of like reading lamps with the flexible neck and the little turn twist switch. Off on the side, shooting the light, because that's another thing that you see here, because there's a shadow that goes from the egg toward the right, which means the light source is coming from the left. And supposedly this is supposed to be at night. Well, what the hell is causing the light source? Oh, maybe they got a floodlight. Well, you don't see any of that shit. In any case, there's a lot more things I can get into with this clip, but suffice to say, I think at this point, I'm kind of beating a dead horse the longer I go with it. So in the end, I don't necessarily think that Barber is being truthful. I don't think that News Nation is actually putting out really good information. I mean, you want to talk about disinformation. Doesn't get any worse than that cheesy ass video that they posted and are trying to use to corroborate Barber's story. In the end, I hope you guys will look at these things, think about stuff critically, and hopefully this will leave you in the right headspace. So after reviewing the audio for the segment, I noticed that there was a real big gap, me talking between the audio of both helicopters. So what I decided to do was throw this in there, just give you a clip of the two. The first one that you're going to hear, the silent one of the two, or the quieter of the two, is going to be the audio from the News Nation video. The second one is the louder one. That is the one of the medevac helicopter flying over my house. Thanks a lot. See you soon.
Thank you so much for that awesome segment, John. And I really can't wait to see what you're going to come up with next as far as a series or your next segments, because everything that you talk about is very interesting and always very thorough and well thought out. So I definitely appreciate all that. And I appreciate everybody that helps me out with the show. So next week's episode is going to be a pretty different kind of episode than I've ever actually done. It's going to be me and Ken debating on which prophet, that's right, a prophet, which is like a seer or a fortune teller, you know, one of those guys, which prophet is the better one? Is it Nostradamus or Edgar Cayce? I think I know what it's going to be, but you guys should tune in next week and find out. And again, check us out on all major podcasting platforms, YouTube, TikTok, all those awesome things, Instagram. We're on them all, man. And we're also on the Get Haunted Paranormal Network, too. So definitely check them out. They have amazing podcasts on there as well. So check them out on Facebook, on all the platforms, too. Thank you guys for joining us. Thank you guys for listening. And we'll see you next week. Later. Thank you for listening to the Warped Reality Paranormal Podcast, and thank you to all of my guests and contributors that helped make this show possible. If you have a paranormal experience you'd like to share, questions, comments, or you'd like to be a guest on the show, please leave me a voicemail at 845-600-0744, or you can email me at ghostjoeny@gmail.com. You can do so anonymously if you'd like. Also, please check out our show notes for all social media links of this show and some of our friends. The Warped Reality Paranormal Podcast, uncovering the unseen.